Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's not just a bank, it's a credit union. It belongs to you. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go over to steinershow.org and click on their banner. MECU.com, Baltimore's Credit Union, MeQ, your bank. All right, folks, we are about to have a conversation about our city with members of the City Council and people who work in the President's Office of the City Council. Number is 410-319-8888. In the studio right now is Bobby Kern. Robert Kern is represents District 3, which is where Morgan State University sits. Good to have you back in the studio,
the
Bobby.
The garden spot of the city, as I always like to say. Morgan State University is a gem of my district.
All right. And Lester Davis is with us, who's Director of Communications for Baltimore City Council President Bernard Jack Young. Good to have you in the studio with us, Lester.
Thanks, Mark. Good
Helen
to be
Holton,
here.
We hope, is on the way, who represents District 8, who will be joining us here. Our number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, to join in on this conversation about our council. Decisions have to be made by the end of the month. A budget has to be in place. So the mayor has given her budget to the council, right?
Yes, correct.
That's correct.
And the council cannot raise the budget.
That's correct.
That's correct.
But you can change the budget.
Okay.
We can cut the budget. We can't direct where the direction of those cuts go to restoring.
So now, how does you're presenting the president today?
That's correct. Yeah.
And he's put in an alternative that the mayor is not too fond of. To put it lightly,
Mark, I wouldn't put it as necessarily an alternative. I would say it's an enhancement.
That's a good way to put it.
To the mayor's budget, and
one day you'll run for office too. I can tell already.
Okay,
but go ahead. I'm just kidding, Lester.
The council president put forth an enhancement to the mayor's budget. You know, nearly $3 billion budget, and what he's looked at is funding some universal priorities that are universally liked across the board. These are priorities that the mayor has supported, when she was council president, and a majority of the colleagues support. So, initially he wanted to just let's get an agreement that these priorities, we all support them, and then we can figure out how to pay for it.
But how is talk about how substantially different the budget is, the proposals are, that the president put in from the mayor's? What do they do that's different?
Well, to the mayor's credit, Mark, she had a tough go. Since she's been mayor, she's had to close multi-million dollar budget deficit. So the council president recognizes that, she had a difficult task before. What he's looked to do is to take her budget and take it a step further. So what that looks like is, doubling the amount of money that the city spends on youth summer jobs, doubling the amount of money that's spent on after school care slots, because there's a lack of after school slots. Keeping our rec centers open, keeping fire companies from closing. So what he's looked at doing is for nearly $3 billion budget, saying, hey, look, there's enough fat in $3 billion worth of a budget to come up with $17.1 million to fund priorities that are critical to Baltimore's success.
But they will require, as was pointed out in the paper, in the Sun papers, also in the Baltimore Brew, that they would require, let's say, the police department taking a hit, they would lose 8 jobs. It didn't specify what those jobs were, but they would be 8 jobs.
Well, that's a point of disagreement, I think, between the council president and the administration. You're talking about an organization, an agency, the police department, that has a budget of over $400 million. Surely, how they enact that cut is up to them. But there was no cause for layoffs of any police officer or any other personnel. They could adjust monies in other areas.
Bobby,
well, I appreciate the council president for coming forth with a plan that he thinks that will be help to provide restore the cuts. But I'm going to just give you a little history lesson. And I was talking to Lester. I remember I mentioned to him when we were waiting to get on there back in 1997. Then Mayor Kurt Schmoke was going to close dozens. Several, many, many rec centers. First real cut to recreation parks since I was on the council, elected in 1995. Then Councilman O'Malley and President Lawrence Bell came up with a cut for about $7 or $8 million that would have restored rec centers in that budget for the next operating year of 98. I was with then the Mayor Schmoke at that time, voted against the cut, but I knew I had to do what I could do to help restore cuts to the rec centers. I reversed my vote. But then Council President Lawrence Bell and Councilman O'Malley hadn't lined up the mayor's support that the cuts went through, that you would restore X, restore Y, restore Z, whatever it was, rec centers, after-school programs. And when then Mayor Schmoke did, he said, fine, I'll let the cut stand. I'll lower the property tax from 585 to 582. So I reversed my vote, hoping that the mayor would restore the rec center's mayor spoke at the time, and the mayor said, that's fine, I'll let the cut stand, I'm going to reduce the property tax. I'm not going to get caught in that same thing again. If the council president is willing to have agreement with the administration that these cuts would go to restoring rec centers, after-hour programs, firehouses, that's fine. But unless you have that agreement in place with whatever administration is the mayor, then I'm not going to be able to be part of that.
Well, I'm going to open the phones here in a second, but you want to respond, Lester?
Yeah, I do. Very well aware of what the councilman just described, and I think, you know, from the council president's perspective, look, you know, the things that he's pushing and advocating for, these are priorities that the mayor wants as well. She in 2009, as council president Rawlings Blake, she pushed for the exact same initiatives and things that the council president is pushing for now. So they're on the same page in terms of the actual priorities. It's just how do you fund them? And just one last point, Mark, before you go to the callers, the council president has said and been clear from the beginning that, you know, he has put forth a plan that requires on a number of moving monies, maneuvering the budget. But if the mayor or her administration has a different way to get us to that $17.1 million, We'd love to hear it. He's not wedded necessarily to how he comes up with that 17.1. I think what he's saying is that there's enough fat to come up with 17.1 out of 3 billion in some combination, some way. So if there are other ways, if some of the cuts he proposed are not necessarily to the liking of the administration, he's open to hear other ways to get there.
Well, let me open the phones here. I have a lot of other questions for you all, and hopefully sure. for Councilwoman Holton, who should be on her way. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Travis in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, thank you. I just kind of want to express my concern. You know, we're talking cuts, 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 and we're dueling, oh, let's cut this, we should cut that. And, of course, there's also on the table we have a bottle tax, which is, and I don't think anyone could dispute this, a regressive tax. It hits, you know, 5 cents to me is a lot more than 5 cents to a councilman or, you know, someone on the BDC or another wealthy Baltimorean. And it's just really, it's distressing that we have Democrats arguing with Democrats about the best way to enact austerity and regressive taxes, where, you know, we have this budget, and you're right, you know, we can't increase the amount of money that's come in, we have to work within the constraints, but we're still giving these massive tax breaks to downtown developers, Petrakis, you know, other BDC buddies. You know, no one's paying their property taxes, which is where the money for the schools is supposed to come to. But instead, we're looking to cut services, and we're looking to put a tax that's really going to impact the poorest in the city first. It won't break them. 5 cents isn't going to kill anyone. But 5 cents is a lot more, like I said, to Joe Average than to anyone sitting on the council or any of the people who donate to their campaigns. So I just wonder if we couldn't look at things like paying private companies to run speed, you know, cameras and red light cameras, paying a private company to administer parking. You know, couldn't we look at things that we pay for that we should be doing ourselves and look at taking money where, you know, the people who own those condos at Harbor East have a lot more to give than the people who might buy a bottle of Pepsi on the corner store? I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Travis.
Mark, I'll go. Travis, thanks for your call. I think you're absolutely correct. I know that the council president has been, you know, concerned for a while that you can't just continue to, you know, tax Baltimore City residents over and over again, residents and business owners. And so that's why, you know, for his package of priorities, which aren't necessarily, you know, feel-good measures. I mean, these are the difference in some instances between life and death when you're talking about closing fire companies. We just had a huge five-alarm fire in Baltimore yesterday evening.
In Fells Point.
Yeah, that wasn't tragic, but could have been. So I think what he's looked to do is to propose a package of priorities and then fund them by, you know, budgeting efficiency by saying, okay, we have, you know, these slew of priorities that are really critical to the quality of Baltimoreans. Let's pay for them by being responsible and living within our means.
Mark, well, I know that Travis mentioned about the bottle tax, the 5 cents. Well, 5 cents is as good to me as it is to Travis, too. I mean, obviously, personal budgets and home budgets are because the economy slowed down and things with people losing their homes and mortgages and all. 5 cents is 5 cents to everybody. I'd be more concerned about the businesses that might have been in the outer, not the donut, the outer hole of the donut in the areas closer to the counties where they might go across the county line to a grocery store. But I had those arguments back in 07 when the smoking ban, as you know, people say, well, we're going to go to the bars and restaurants in the county to smoke. I don't believe folks are going to drive straight distances to avoid the bottle tax. I do believe it might change some attitudes. People might buy 2 liters because the bottle tax is not on anything 2 liters or above. I rarely buy a 2 liter, but I will probably be buying 2 liters. My wife buys the 2 liter bottles of the Diet Coke and Coke. But I believe in the long run it's not going to be as impact on the personal finances of folks as people think.
There are people on the council who voted against this. Helen Holton was one, and others have kind of also opposed it. Carl Stokes opposed it, and in the editorial that was written in the Sun papers the other week, one of the ideas that Bill Henry, Councilman Henry, came up with was saying we should look at all the ways of raising the money rather than the bottle tax. We could start taxing. And greater economy taxing billboards and other things would add up to money. It would be $11 million as opposed to $10 million and not adding it onto the back of taxpayers. Now, the president was going to vote against it, but now he's supporting it. Some people criticize the president for switching his vote against the bottle tax and now for it. But there seemed to be an alternative from Bill Henry that nobody seemed to take seriously on the council.
Well, Mark, I think there was a little bit of confusion. I wouldn't characterize it as, you know, a flip flop per se, or that he was for it, then he was against it, then he was for it. What actually happened is that from the beginning, the council president has been clear that, you know, he was uncomfortable with the bottle tax. It was not necessarily his ideal way to get at the end result, which is to pump more money into renovating and building new schools. But having said that, you know, that was something that was on the table, and you know, he was committed to supporting that.
Mark, it's ironic you mentioned that because that was on the agenda last night, City Council Bill 12-073, the outdoor advertising excise tax. Councilman Henry was a sponsor. Myself, Mary Pat Clark, and Warren Branch, and we were the only 4 votes for the measure last night. I remained consistent. I voted for Councilman Bill Henry's proposal last night. It's just ironic that some of the folks that voted against the voted for the
bottle tax
voted against this when I thought that we needed to do as much as we could to raise
the
revenues.
Why do you think that's happening? Let me go back to the phone. Says Roop, Aaron, Keith, Kirk. Can I get to all your calls that have just called in, and whoever's calling in, we're going to get to all these calls. But I mean, let me throw this out on the table. You may say no, but I'm going to throw it anyway.
Sure.
There was a lot of talk among the scuttlebutt. Let's say I have no verification. I can't say it's completely true, but that the majority of people in the city council opposed the bottle tax.
Opposed?
Wait a minute.
Okay.
And that a lot of them wanted it killed in Carl Stokes' committee. But fear of the power of the mayor's office stopped it, and people voted for it for other reasons. That there were a lot of people who would have been much more comfortable if Carl had killed it in his committee, so they didn't have to vote yes. But they had to vote yes for political reasons.
I can't speak for other council folks. I mean, they have to speak for themselves. I was with Dr. Alonzo, the CEO of the schools, and the mayor at these 2 press conferences at schools with the dilapidated condition of certain schools, and I knew in my mind that I had to be with this for the so in my lifetime we could see some more new schools open in Baltimore City and the renovations of schools that are in really tough shape and no air conditioning, no heat sometimes in the winter, no doors on the stalls in the restrooms and you name it. So I was aboard early along with Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, the council vice president who was the mayor's floor leader, and others for the issue of the bottle tax. The only thing true about the majority of the members against the bottle tax was in the committee, the taxation committee. I believe firmly all along that there was support enough to pass the bottle tax months ago, even without the powers to be in the administration trying to persuade some folks. Now, I can't speak for other council people, but I was for the bottle tax. Actually, to be truth be known, it was 4 cents. It was the first time 2 years ago. I wanted to go to a nickel then, but in order to get it through 2 years ago, we had to go to 2 cents. But I always wanted to go to a nickel then and get the discussion off the table. We wouldn't be having this discussion today.
Yeah, Mark, I can't speak for the other members of the council, but you know, I know where the council president was concerned. You know, this the funding from this is going to go into a fund that he and Councilman Kraft established for the very purpose of funding, you know, renovation and building new schools. So he had some issues with the regressive nature of the tax, but at the end of the day, being able to pump, you know, $10 million and float bonds on top of that was pretty good process.
We're going to go back to the phones. I mean, just also welcome the Councilwoman Helen Holton from District 8. Helen, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be with you, Mark.
Hi, Mark Howland.
Hi, Councilwoman.
So, Helen, we're going to jump in and get a listener in here or two, and then we're going to come back and talk about your vote against the bottle bill. Okay?
Okay.
Come right back to that. Let's go 410-319-8888. And Roop in Hamilton, you're on the air. Hi, Roop. You're on the air.
Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Hello, Councilman.
Hello, Mark. Roop. How you doing?
Hello.
Hi, Roop.
Doing great. And this is just a broader tax comment that I have to make. My wife and I moved into Baltimore in 2004. In spite of the bad schools and rising crime and all those, you know, negative things, schools have been improving. There has been many charter schools, and we decided to raise our kids here.
Mm-hmm.
Right
mm-hmm.
now, we love it here, and I live in Hamilton. And because of the renaissance going on with Hamilton Tavern and Clementine and Green Onion and other responsible businesses. But, about 3 months ago, I was really troubled to hear that a big Royal Farms gas station is coming to Hartford and Glenmore. This gas station is open 24 hours or planned to be open 24 hours. It has 14 gas pumps. 72 parking spaces. It's going to take a city block from Mary to Glenmore, and there's already so much crime happening, so much trash happening, and so much prostitution happening. And in Hamilton Library is where kids from Hamilton Elementary and Middle go there, and they use it as an aftercare because their parents probably can't afford aftercare for them. So, you know, if Royal Farms does open up the gas station here, and my family and our friends that live around the neighborhood are thinking about moving because this is a kind of truck stop that should be in Interstate 95,
okay.
Not in the residential.
Can I address that, Mark? Because I was at the Glenham Belfort community organization the other night when they had the vote on it. It is in the catchment area of Glenham Belfort Community Association. They had a vote of the community association members the other night. They heard proposals from the developers or the folks that are doing the Royal Farm, and the community organization voted in favor of the proposal. I spoke at the organization, the Glenham Belfort, the other night, and I mentioned how we, in Hartford Road, I'm really thankful that Roop knows about the Clementines and the Hamilton Tavern and other good things in the
right, but what about the Royal Farm story?
It's probably going to happen because the community organization signed off. They're going to go through site plan review with the planning, which they've been through once, so they're going to be able to scale back their operation a little bit. But it's in the long run, the community organization signed off on it in their catchment area, and I'm going to go forward with the proposal.
But a lot of people in the communities do oppose it, though.
The vote.
A lot of people oppose it.
It didn't reflect the vote at the community organization meeting, which I attended.
Does the community need it?
Well, the site is the old Angelos law office there, and operating engineers. Union Hall there. Obviously, Royal Farm probably did their market study and figured.
Yeah, but does the community need it? Is the question.
The community voted in favor of it, and that's where. As council people, we empower the communities basically through land use issues, and if the community voted for it, then it's incumbent on me to see their wishes.
Helen Holton, let me get you back in this conversation. I'm glad you could join us.
Thank you.
One of the things I said earlier before you got on the air was that, and then we'll come back to our phones, Aaron, Keith, Kirk, Hank, we're going to come to your calls. You're all going to get on the air. That when you the bottle tax we were talking about, and one of the things I said was there's a lot of talk off the record from people that a lot of councilmen wanted this bottle tax killed in committee, but were afraid to have it done because they didn't want to take on the power of the mayor. I don't know if you can speak to that or not, but I'm going to raise it with you and as I did with the others.
Okay, I'm going to say this: it couldn't be killed in committee, and here's the thing. Unless it stayed in committee. And had it stayed in committee, it just would have stayed in committee. So it would have never come to a full vote of the body. As long as there was a vote that took place on that bill, it then had to come out of committee. But there had been no vote taken, which is why, and there was the threat of a majority of council members willing to force that bill out of committee, outside of the wishes of the committee members, the majority of the committee members, in order to bring it to a vote for the full committee, for the full council.
Mark, the council lady is correct. There would have been, if it wasn't a vote in committee, it would have stayed in committee until, if it was a time that eight members of the council would have petitioned it out. And that had never happened since I came into the council with Helen in 95. That has not happened since we've been on the council. There was an effort a few years ago for the living wage bill, which I was also a petitioner to get that bill out of the committee. But the closest, and I just want to refer to one thing, back in 2005 or maybe 6, I chaired the Judiciary Committee, had an issue in my committee which I was strictly against. Didn't even want to have a hearing, but because majority of the council members wanted to have the hearing, wanted to move it forward, I moved forward. So it's incumbent to the committee chairs, and Helen is a standing committee chair of the Budget Committee. She understands the process, and I've been standing committee chair ever since I've been on the council. So the committee chair sort of has to acquiesce to the council as a whole on any issue.
So, now, Helen, you voted against the bottle tax. Did you also?
I did.
Explain that to us, but did you also vote for or against Bill Henry's bill to tax billboards?
I voted against the tax the billboards.
Why?
Bill as well. Why? Because if we're not going to remove the moratorium on billboards, that would really allow that to be a revenue source. I think on some measure we are becoming a business unfriendly city. And to that end, I think we should be very mindful as how we tax the businesses in this city. I'm going to say that, yes, we have an agreement with hospitals and universities with a pilot because they're tax exempt, but I don't think that agreement is as strong as it should be in terms of contributing to the tax base or the general fund of what this city needs to operate. And so I voted against the bottle tax because when Councilman Kern and I came onto the council in 95, in 1996, we sunset a container tax similar to what this bill is. Because it was proven to be a regressive tax, it was proven to be anti-business, and at that time it was Baltimore City and Baltimore County. And we followed suit behind Baltimore County that says, hey, this source of revenue can't be maintained, and people will just go outside of where we are to purchase their goods and services. Here's the problem with the container tax, the bottle tax, is that Yes, you've exempted 2-liter containers. Yes, you've exempted milk and
juice
and juice. Any product that has at least 10% juice in it. But let's look at all the corner stores in the city that we know is a whole nother sore spot for many neighborhoods across the city. In the summertime, particularly now when it's hot, kids don't say, "Mommy, can I have money to go get a soda?" and go to the corner store and buy a 2-liter soda or even a juice drink to be exempt from the tax. They want a soda or they want water. And both of those items are taxed with the bottle tax. The other reality is that the law says that it's the distributor that pays the tax. Well, in all likelihood, it always there's a trickle-down effect. So the distributor passes the cost on to the retailer passes it on to the consumer, and I assure you, in the majority of cases, it will not be a 5-cent increase.
So
it will be more than that.
That's correct.
Aside from that, beverages are loss leaders for the,
no pun intended,
the supermarkets and stores, but particularly supermarkets. And so where they can use that to attract people into the store, if you're coming to get the beverages that are on sale, you're going to buy some sort of grocery item.
Okay,
you're going to patronize that business.
Well, we have to take a quick break here, Helen, but I want to come. I'm going to go right to the phones when we come back. But I want to know, okay, this is fine. You vote against this tax. You vote against the ballot tax. We vote against taxing a billion-dollar corporation like Clear Channel who puts up billboards.
I voted for both of them.
We don't have money that's coming in from hospitals or churches and all the land they own in the city. And we say we're business unfriendly, but a lot of corporations in this town are doing very well and paying very few taxes. So where do we get the money to keep rec centers open?
I'm not saying that we should not tax businesses.
Helen, we have to take a break. We'll come back and wrestle that when we come back. So stay with us, and we'll come back and come back to Aaron Keith, Kirk, Hank, Clarence. We're coming to your calls. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Jumping back into the show here, I want to remind you that WEAA is winding down its fiscal year on June the 30th. And your support at this time will really help us and end our year successfully. So please make a pledge of support at any level that you deem appropriate for this program, any program you love on this station, and we will automatically enter your name to win a Nook Color tablet from Barnes & Noble. So help keep our programs alive. Keep your station alive. Pledge for your public radio station, WEAA.org, and you may also have a Nook Color tablet in your life. We are joined here by Councilwoman Helen Holton, District 4, Councilman Bob
District
Curran.
Eight.
I'm sorry, maybe eight, sorry. That's Councilman Bob Curran from District 3, and Lester Davis, who's Director of Communications for Baltimore City Council President Bernard Jack Young. 410-319-8888. Aaron, you've been waiting. You're on the air.
Amazing, these council people talking about the bottle tax like it doesn't affect anybody. Let me inform the council members of something in case they don't know. In our city, that folk will sell sodas and stuff on the street illegally. In fact, there are folk who are already selling it on the street, and folk won't pay the bottle tax if folk buy it on the street illegally.
Well, I know that I see the folks in the corner selling the hot weather, selling the bottles for a dollar. I realize they're not paying the nickel tax on that dollar. But I'm more concerned about some of the small stores carting in there. Sometimes you see a van open up in front of a convenience store and they're unloading cases of water or sodas. Obviously, they might have bought them at Sam's Club or maybe they're in a co-op together and maybe a way to avoid paying the bottle tax, but I do know the Department of Finance has investigators going out looking to see because on receipts from distributors whether they're charging the bottle tax to the local stores. So I do know that there's probably ways that folks are trying to get around it. I see it on the street. It's not like it's not there, but hopefully the majority of the folks, legitimate grocery stores, right. I understand the majority of the grocery stores are going to be on the up and up.
And, Mark, let me just to jump in.
You got people on the street selling it. There's a fellow who I know who sells it on the street by the cards.
Yeah. Right, but I want to say this to the person who's selling it on the street. They're not the ones subject to pay the tax. The tax is to be paid by the distributors.
Use them rather than pay the tax.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I live on the outskirts of the city, in the city near the city-county line, near Sam's Club. And, you know, on a Saturday morning, you can see retail merchants with carts full of beverages, water, sodas, whatever. They're not paying the beverage tax.
And, you know,
they're carting that stuff right into the city to their corner stores where they're selling it, jacking up the price, and having people believe that, oh, it's because they have to pay the beverage tax.
Well, that's why I spoke about it on the street or in cases where they live near the county line, such as you do, Councilman. And I live not far where I could go up Hartford Road and be in the county within minutes. I think the bottle tax is an ill-advised deal, given the fact that folk have ways to get around it, and I don't believe it's going to bring in the money the mayor says it is.
It's a regressive tax, and with Baltimore City being the only jurisdiction to pay the tax, people will rise up and stop buying their beverages in the city. Not only those who can, because there's a group of people who have no choice but to buy their beverages in the city, unless they get a hack or someone takes mercy on them and takes them to a suburb where they can purchase their beverages and avoid the increases they're going to pay. And once you go outside the city to buy beverages, you're going to buy other things while you're at the store.
Okay.
That you might be buying in the city, but you won't be because you're already at an establishment to buy your beverages.
So, Aaron, thanks for the call. And you wanted to say something last
night? Yeah, Mark, I just want to jump in. So last night after the council gave initial approval to the bill and it moved on, one of the challenges that the council president put out there is that you're right. He has heard from a number of the businesses, and his challenge has been buy in Baltimore. And if we're gonna put in a tax like this that's for a really good cause, we need to make sure that folks are not crossing the county line to avoid the tax, but that they're buying in Baltimore.
Let me open the phones again. Let's listen here to our constituents.
And while you're opening the phones, I'm gonna say, Lester, there are people in my district that tell me all the time, oh, yeah, I'm just going to the county to buy my stuff.
But you know, Council Lady,
I do want to get the callers in. 410-319-8888. Keith in Northeast, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Keith.
Your guest. Let me explain something to you, that this is what I'm hearing. I hope to Christ that none of the council people and the communications director, everybody in Baltimore has a thinking mind. And I'm going to tell you right now, y'all want to sit there and trivialize, well, we need a 5-cent bottle tax. You know, the level of services in this city as a whole, this city reminds me, is beginning to remind me of the Daily Machine in Chicago, where the mayor has so much power, nobody is afraid to go up against the mayor. Now, you know what? The communication director for Councilman Young is on there. Jack Young should be at your studio, Mark, defending himself, not having nobody talk for him, because I'm going to tell you right now, my daughter goes to Catholic High. She's a junior this year. When she graduates next year, I live in Northeast Baltimore and Councilman Scott's the district. We're out of here. I mean, why should you be taxed to death because you can't build new schools? Why should you have to ask the private community, the private sector, to fund your city pools? It is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, Keith, let me ask you a quick question. A very quick answer. Who's going to fund it then?
Mark. Now, you know what? I know nobody want to hear this. No one want to hear this. But let me tell you right now. I see Locust Point, South Baltimore. I see it. If I'm living in 10 years, I see it actually succeeding from Baltimore City.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Right.
But that
you know what, Mark? You might think it's crazy. But I'm going to tell you right now. When you give tips to all these big corporations and you leave the rest of the people.
I hear you. Yeah.
I'm begging for crumbs and everything like that and having a Grand Prix race when when we don't even have decent schools in this city, and everybody talking about you want to keep renovating a 60 and 70 year old school over and over again, put new bathroom doors and new windows on it.
Right.
We need new schools. You know what? Find a source of revenue besides taxing everybody halfway crazy. You know, you want to bring revenue to this city? Do you think any big corporations? Do you think there's going to be a Wegmans or a Harrison Teeter coming to East Baltimore?
No, it's not. Harris Teeter did come to South Baltimore.
You know what? It's a locust point. It won't be in East Baltimore, Councilman Kern.
Let me just ask the locust point thing, Mark.
But it's different. East Baltimore is not locust. Locust point is becoming a place where the working people who live there can't even afford to stay there, and they're being pushed out, and it's becoming a very wealthy neighborhood.
Just to speak directly to Keith, you know, Keith, the things that you just described and the scenario that you just laid out is the exact scenario that the council president had been hearing for months and months and was a large part of responsible for helping him come up with his plan. So you talked about, you know, your family, you have a young child, you know, restoring funding to keep our rec centers open, doubling the amount of money that the city spends on summer jobs, doubling funding for after-school slots for parents who are working so that their children have a safe place to go, restoring funding for Experience Corps, which places seniors into our schools. You know, these are all things that are important to people like you and your family and things that are going to be the difference between you, you know, packing up and moving your family somewhere else and staying in Baltimore City. And so what the council president has done is looked at the budget and recognized that, you know, citizens are, you know, have been asked to sacrifice a lot. So he's looked at a way to make sure the government can sacrifice and government can live within their means. So, you know, his plan for a better Baltimore is one that I think you just laid out the reason why he's pushing for it and wants his colleagues to support it, because it is critical. And we do stand to possibly lose folks like yourself.
Before we go back to the phones, we have a lot of people calling in, so I do want to get as many of these calls as we can the next 25 minutes. So, but a quick question here for you all. Are you comfortable with the group that was appointed by the mayor to look for the next commissioner of police for Baltimore City?
Well, Mark, I'm not sure, you know, where the council president stands on the actual group itself, but I will tell you that, you know, he has said himself that whoever the individuals are that are going to be in the running to replace Commissioner Bielefeld, he is going to stress that community policing has to be.
The reason I asked the question was there's not a community person on the entire panel. The panel is made up of nothing but business leaders.
College and university presidents, deans of law schools.
And the chief of staff for the mayor.
But there's no community. There are no community leaders on that search committee. Not one.
That's right. So to say that they should have community policing is a very interesting comment when you have no one on that panel that is a real community person.
I was called the other day when the panel was announced by administration official, and first I want to say that Commissioner Bielefeld has done a wonderful job.
We're not talking about that. I think he did a great job too.
I would like to see. I know they're doing a national search, as they always do for everybody. I guess when I retire, they'll do a national search for the third district councilman. But hopefully we would look to ourselves in the department to see.
I had was, are you comfortable with the makeup of the committee that doesn't have any community person on it at all? It's nothing
no,
but.
I am not.
That's what I'm asking.
I'm comfortable.
No, I am not.
I know the council lady says no. I can't speak for Lester and the council president. I believe the mayor's people had put a team together they thought would bring a list of candidates to the mayor. It won't just be one. There won't be one recommendation. They're going to make maybe three or four recommendations from a short list to the mayor. And I believe that the administration folks have positioned themselves.
I hear what you're saying, but
Have been at least two or three community advocates that have been on the front line doing community stuff, involved in COP, you know, something, I would have felt that it was more balanced and more representative of really being able to ask questions that are of community people, the neighborhood people that you represent, Councilman Carter.
I understand that, but here's the problem with that, Council Lady. What community people do you do? Do you do one from each section of the city, or do you do folks from Lucas Point? Do you do Harbell, somebody from Harbell?
Maybe you do.
You know, I mean, do you take in 40 community people? I mean, it could be that there's a lot of umbrella groups in
you know what? Mm-hmm. If there were three, I'd say at least there was an effort to give some balance to the selection process.
Well, if those three people, one was from Harbell up in here, and one from NECO.
Not my question to answer.
Well, I just think that in order to have equal representation for communities around the city, it would just be too unwieldy of a committee.
Well, so now we have just people who are at the very top of the city and nobody else
right.
in the city making decisions.
At the very top.
I
yes,
understand
that.
There's some good people. I think Phoebe Haddon's a wonderful human being.
Sure.
She's really bright. She has the best interests in town's
right.
heart. I think Robert Daniels is great. But these are really good people in this committee. But where are the neighborhood people who are doing this day-to-day, the leaders of our community association,
sure.
should they not be on this committee?
But then where do you cut the list off?
Where do you cut this list off?
Well, if you want to add the community activists, I can give you 14 community activists, one from each of my active groups right here in Northeast Baltimore.
Yeah, but you can, Bobby. But
do you do one from each police district?
Let's just be real. Let's just be real. That's so unrealistic what you're saying.
No, Howard, because whenever they draw lines and maps in city council and areas are left out,
You know what, Bobby?
Right.
If you said, okay, we're going to ask the president of CPHA, or we're going to ask, I mean, come on, there are organizations that still stay on the ground with people.
Well, why do we have a representation from Build on the committee? I'd like to see representation
from Build
on the committee.
Build, CPHA, why not?
You know, they should be on the committee, I would agree. But if you talk about opening up to individual community activists,
let me go back to the phones here, and because I promised you would. And who's been holding on the longest here? We're going to have Kirk and Becca. Kirk, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi, Kirk.
I would ask you, what are you suggesting by her not having any community people on there?
What am I seeing?
Question number one. But I really call just to echo an earlier sentiment with regard to recreation centers. I hope that they'll remain a priority for the city. And I just think, you know, every time we have these conversations, every summer this sort of comes up. And why it continues to be even an option for a city that is riddled with, you know, problems with youth and crime, and, you know, everyone has heard, you know, Delegate McDonough and shed light on what everybody already knew, that there is a real need to have something meaningful for kids to be involved in, teenagers to be involved in, outside of, you know, being at the harbor or being other places where, you know, it's just a terrible disservice to the very people that need this city. And again, don't think that when these young people grow up, that they won't look back and recognize how, you know, they were left out. I didn't grow up in a city like that, and, you know, if I can share personal stories, the recreation centers were, in fact, a safe haven for me. So to the council people that are there, I hope that it will continue to be a priority that's going to be a non-negotiable when it comes to impacting pools, recreation centers, and the like. They can no longer be a priority. They have to actually be the first item in the budget behind public safety. Because I think anything short of that is really going to be detrimental in the short and long run for the city.
Kirk, thank you so much for your thoughts. Anyone has a quick thought to respond to Kirk about
Rec
centers?
Kirk, I think you and the council president are singing from the same hymn book. That's exactly what, you know, his vision and his priority has been, is that the city of Baltimore, which has a nearly $3 billion budget, can afford to invest more on the front end in youth and our children. And I think that's the biggest part of his push, you know, his enhancement to the mayor's budget, which is to really, truly, you know, put your money where your mouth is and do that in a way by government living within its means.
Very quickly, I mean, I want to get back to the phones here, but Helen and Bobby, I mean, this closing of rec centers is not a minor issue.
No, it's not a minor issue.
No,
it's not at all. And it's unfortunately that Recs and Parks, and I know Helen can verify this, over the years we've been on the council, they always seem to get the hit first. Because maybe because they most of their funds are general funds, obviously they get hit the most. Back in 97, as I mentioned earlier in the show, when we came up with those cuts and the mayor wouldn't decide to put back, that was the worst cuts for the rec centers
I remember
in years.
And it was the first dramatic reduction in property tax at the expense of recreation.
Yes, it was. And Helen and I were both part of that. I mean, unfortunately, we were there.
And I will say this. I will say this, that instead of at some point in time, we need to draw a line in the sand and say, we're not going to keep pouring all this money into public safety, but we're going to make an investment in youth. Because until you do that, really do that, you're not going to see crime go down in the ways that people want them to. Because much of the crime isn't coming from people outside of the city. It's coming from people in the city. And far too much of it from people under legal age.
Yes.
Under legal age. And so when you talk about recreation and parks, I think it takes a forward-thinking strategic plan that says, all right, we're going to close them, but we're going to wait. We're going to kind of do a two-pronged approach that says, while we're building these new community centers, we're going to keep these open at some level so that we don't end up closing them and young people having no place to go.
It's been proven, Mark, just very briefly, I was told years ago, that every dollar you put in on the front end, either in our schools, our recs and parks, our after-school programs, it saves you $7 in the criminal justice system at the end of...
Absolutely.
That's one for seven. That's always been a ratio that I've always stuck in my mind.
So let me go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Becca in Hamilton, you're on the air. Then we'll go to Clarence.
I wanted to challenge Councilman Curran's assertion that the Royal Farms Project is being supported by the Hamilton community.
The Royal Farms Project...
Had you finished your thought, Becca?
Yes. This is a 14-pump Royal Farms with 70 gas stations being put in a residential community along Harford Road. I know several neighbors and friends who are very upset and coalescing to oppose this project.
Unfortunately, at last week's Glenham Belford
right.
Community
vote,
Association.
I'm sorry, sir. That vote was 13-11.
Yes, it was.
That does not make a fair representation of this community.
Were you at that meeting?
Let her finish.
My husband was at that meeting. Mm-hmm. I was home taking care of our kids.
Okay.
24 members of Hamilton does not make a community. The Westfield Community Association unanimously voted to oppose this project.
I understand that. I was not at that meeting, but I understand mm-hmm. they opposed. But the catchment area for this project is the Glenham Belford.
But unfortunately, Westfield is, how they divide the neighborhood associations. It's only a few streets over.
I know where it is.
So for you to suggest that the citizens of Westfield would not be impacted by this project is false.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be impacted. I can tell you from history that when the Royal Farms wanted to put the gas pumps at their Eckerdale and Hartford station, Lauraville voted against it, and he did not get it. The council people, at least this council person, takes its marching orders from the community organizations
represent. But, sir, you voted at that meeting to support it. I don't see how 24 members of a community
I did not vote at that meeting.
A community supports the project.
But it doesn't
24
have a point.
Members.
How many thousands of people live there?
Exactly, in Hamilton. And for 24 to make up this decision seems ridiculous.
Well,
there's
ma'am,
so many children living within, 2 miles of this proposed project.
And
for you as our representative to support it is ridiculous. The pollution, the crime that's going to come along with this. A 14-pump gas station? This is ridiculous.
I did not vote at the meeting. I am not a member of the Glenham Belford Community Association.
I guess I don't understand how you can support this in a residential area, and to compare a Royal Farms to the small businesses along Harford Road is ridiculous. Clementine, Zeke's, the physical therapy business, those are all small businesses. Royal Farms is a mega company. For you to compare the support of Royal Farms to the support of small businesses is crazy to me. I hope you can explain that.
I can explain that as a council person, and I don't know how Councilwoman Holton does it, but I know that we take our marching orders from the community organizations we empower.
24 people! So you're taking your marching... Are you taking...
Rebecca, I don't interrupt because we have to get to another caller, but I appreciate your the forthrightness of your presentation on the air. I mean, I think that there are a lot of people. I've gotten dozens of emails from people saying, "Are you going to raise this issue on your show?" Because
well, sure.
Why do you need all these pumps, all this extra traffic? Is Royal Farms calling the shop because they're a big corporation? Because the operating engineers want to make some money? Is that what's happening
well,
here?
I hate to use apples and oranges here, but there was another issue in the Glenham Belford Community Association where local folks around a particular zoning issue on Richard Avenue were against, but the community organization signs off on. As a council person, and I can't speak for Councilwoman Holton, but I know that others do probably, when a local community organization approves or disapproves of a project in their area, this council person empowers that community organization.
A very quick question, because I want to get to one or two callers here. We only have like 5 minutes left. But isn't part of the council person's job to stand up for what they believe and not just what happens?
I know, but a part of a council person's duties is also to empower the communities that they represent.
Helen, you want to take a very quick thought at this?
I will just share this. I had a project in my district that the community that it was in was not as closely impacted by a neighboring community. And the neighboring community was opposed to it on the surface. I pulled the bill back. And what I charged the project organization with was to go out, knock on doors, have open houses, educate the community, poll the residents of the wider community, and see where things go. And if there was more than 50% support for the project, then I would support it with the legislation going forward. That's what they did. And what came out of it is that there was a church that supported it, and they did something that they really hadn't done, and they went door to door within the community, and they said, you know what? We're going to be engaged in this community going forward because we learned so much in this process. And so now I have two communities supporting it and a whole new effort of support coming to the community from those who got to learn a lot in the process of deciding which way this issue was going to go. So I put it out, I let the people make the decision and not just a few that came to the meeting.
At that meeting, Mark, there was about 70 people. There were folks from other communities there. There were competitor gas station folks raising the problem, concerns that they're going to have to cut their prices to match Royal Farms. And the bottom line for this councilman is, the folks that were at that meeting were the voting members of the community organization. Some folks had not paid their dues for years; just wanted to show up.
Yeah, but
that's the process, though, Mark. That's the process of community organizations when you go to these meetings on a routine basis.
Except we all live in neighborhoods, and
right,
and there are people who spend their lives being activists in community organizations, but they don't necessarily represent the entire community.
That's correct. That's correct. But as council people, when a local community organization signs off on a project or thumbs down a project, I was just in front of the BMZA Board of Missouri Zoning Appeals today concerning the daycare center at North Hartford Road.
Okay. So we have to leave this conversation now and go off to our next conversation, top of the hour. Do you want to have a final thought on this? Representative, the President?
Yeah, I just, Mark, thanks for having us on. And again, from the consensus I heard from a number of the callers is that, a lot of these things that the Council President and his colleagues are pushing, this plan for a better Baltimore, are things that, citizens truly want and that will really make a huge difference in everyday Baltimore.
What we'll commit to here is week after that, we will look forward to having our Council representatives back. To really talk about this as we near the end of this budget debate in our city council. You need to take part in this. We'll have our open town meetings here in the air with our council representatives, as many who will come. I want to thank Councilwoman Helen Holton, District 8.
Thank you, Mark.
Helen, great. Thank you so much for making it today. It's good to have you with us. Next time, it'll be a pleasure to see you in the studio. It'll be lovely to see you again.
Okay.
Councilman Bobby Curran.
Thank you, Mark.
District 3 and Lester Davis.
The garden spot of the city.
Lester Davis, who represents Council President Bernard Jack Young.
Thanks, Mark.
As his Director of Communications. Thank you for being here. As we get out of here, let me remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. And we'll be right back with our second hour, Dr. Lester Spence, Dr. Cheatham, and others joining us to talk about issues in the city as well.